In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan Shot today.
All right, we are reacting to last night's win, 34-10 over the Cowboys. So the Texans are through this stretch of primetime-only games, three straight primetime games, back to the Sunday noon kick against the Tennessee Titans this coming weekend. It's at home. You can hear the game right here on Sports Radio 610. Noon kick, 9 a.m. Texans countdown. Hey, it's a Texans Ticket Tuesday as well. We should mention that. Oh. We're giving away tickets to that game in the 9 o'clock hour, Seth.
So, hey-o.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So 9 o'clock hour, be listening. Your chance to go check out the 7-4 Houston Texans against the woeful Tennessee Titans, sit in the front row in the bullpen. That's pretty cool.
And Ross Tucker's going to be there for the TV.
He's calling the game on CBS.
He's a color commentator for the TV.
Okay. Yep, for the gotcha. TV. Yeah, so Ross Tucker will be on the call for that.
We should try to do like a meet and greet with Ross. If there's a way we can figure out to pay him for it.
He's got
a very busy schedule.
He does. I know Ross and you've been on the same text I have. And I think we're going to find a place to go watch some games on Thursday night. So maybe we put it out there where we're going to if people want to come say hi to him. Ross seems like somebody who's a man of the people that way, where he would like shaking hands with the folks. So we'll see. That's a possibility. Let's get to the Pettycast. This is it's the 8 o'clock segment on Tuesday. We can be pretty petty all the time, but we designate this period of time, the 8 o'clock segment, to be wholly and exclusively petty here.
We do it guilt-free.
Yes.
Sometimes guilt-free. After I get off of done with a show, I'm like, oh, that's not the version of myself I want to be.
Right.
Talking about Instagram offensive tackles and whatnot.
Right.
But no, I just fully release myself to all my pettiness.
Immunity.
Yeah.
Immunity in this segment.
We're bad humans in this segment.
That's right. And we're proud of it. Let's start with, and it isn't always just us being petty. We highlight the pettiness of others. Now, I found the audio, Seth, of the Ja'Marr Chase quotes that you and I were discussing yesterday on the show, where Ja'Marr Chase was being asked, hey, Ja'Marr Chase, wide receiver for the Bengals, was asked following a game where they lost in the waning moments of the game to fall to 4-7 on the season, despite a huge night from Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, was asked about, hey, why can't you guys finish these games? We read the quotes yesterday. He's basically putting it on like, hey, ask Zach Taylor, ask him. You know, that's above my pay grade. Here is what it sounded like Ja'Marr Chase talking about having to answer questions about the team's inability to finish games.
I've heard everybody obviously knows you need to do. What do you do?
How do I do it? I don't know. Ask Zach. Ask the coaches. Don't ask me. That's not my job.
To finish?
I play football on the field. I don't call plays for us, you know? So I can't really do nothing.
You think that's part of the finishing factor is play stuff?
I don't know.
Okay. A credit to that reporter who kept pressing him on that. That was pretty good.
I could go multiple ways on that. Everything he said is true. but he was curt, but he was also upset afterward. He was upset after a loss, and times are tough. It's not looking great for Zach Taylor, I don't think. I saw a poll from a Cleveland area radio host yesterday where he asked, who gets a job first if he gets fired, Kevin Stefanski or Zach Taylor?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised because usually the disgruntled home fan base is way more down on their own coach than anybody else in the league.
Yeah.
It was like 85% of mostly Browns fans thought Kevin Stefanski would get a job first. And I think, look, people are looking at it there as it's not Kevin Stefanski's fault the team traded for Deshaun Watson, whereas Zach Taylor has Joe Burrow and he's squandering him.
As you know, I listen to Cleveland radio probably as much or more than any other out-of-market city than, you know, Houston first and foremost, but out-of-market I listen to a lot of Houston. I think Ken Carman and Anthony Lima on their morning show up there do an incredible job. I think they're really, really good. And we get, you know, they're on an hour before us, so I listen to them sometimes. The general consensus in Cleveland is Kevin Stefanski is going to get fired, but it's not really his fault. You know, it's just one of these things, like, they're going to have a terrible year. The offense is a huge reason why, and they just need to start over and clean house in Cleveland. So that doesn't – now, 85% shocks me a little bit that it's that overwhelming, but I'm not surprised there are a lot of Cleveland fans that are – that are that realize Stefanski probably is a pretty good coach, you know, yeah. who's just in a bad circumstance.
You got to remember whichever host it is, too, like whatever he's been spewing out in terms of like his particular brand. His Twitter followers are probably primed to agree with him, too.
That's true.
So that guy's probably been sticking up for Kevin Stefanski.
Maybe so. Next one here. Guess who was benched? This is me getting petty now. No two ways about it. Daniel Jones benched in New York.
You know what?
Finally.
Yeah, and I think where you can really deserve to be petty about this is if you had to sit through, and if you can remember the years and years and years of people saying, oh, supposedly the Giants were dumb for drafting Joe Burrow, or I refer drafting Daniel Jones instead of Josh Allen. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Daniel Jones was supposed to be drafted lower, but you thought they were dumb, huh? Look at him now. No. He is what he's always been. He's not a good NFL quarterback.
The dumb thing was paying him. Like that, I mean, it was silly to draft him. I mean, he was drafted a year after Josh Allen, so that's water under the bridge, but I get what you're saying.
There'd be little moments where Daniel Jones would look good or promising, or Saquon Barkley would be carrying the team.
Yeah.
And people acted like they were dunking on everybody because you still didn't know if Daniel Jones was actually any good or not.
Right. No, he's benched now. This is what it sounded like in the preseason on Hard Knocks with Joe Shane, the GM, explaining the necessity of finding out and building around Daniel Jones instead of bringing back Saquon Barkley.
We lose Saquon, right? What's our identity going to be on offense now? Like, what's our plan to? What's the next step of that? I guess is what I'm thinking. Like, we're losing a large part of our offense, our explosiveness, our touchdowns. Quarterback, if it's Daniel, depends on the run game.
We got to upgrade the offensive line, and you're paying the guy $40 million. It's not to hand the ball off to a $12 million back. My plan is to address the offensive line at some point here in free agency. We're sitting at 6. There's a chance there's an offensive weapon there. This is the year for Daniel. Plan all along was give him a couple years. Is he our guy for the next 10 years, or do we need to pivot and find somebody else?
I love how Joe Shane acts like somebody else gave Daniel Jones $40 million a year. You gave him $40 million a year.
Like, right. I know. He's acting like he inherited the Daniel Jones contract or something. Yeah. The thinking is so backwards. And part of that's the economics of the NFL. But he's in there on television telling the owner of the team, hey, yeah, that thing that I spent a lot of money for, I actually don't know whether I should have bought it or
right.
So I need some more money.
They're so dumb. Yeah.
It's like asking your parents to co-sign for your third vehicle purchase.
Right.
You know, like, the first two didn't quite work out, Mom and Dad. But things are on the up.
Right.
I know they are. Yeah. So I need to buy a G-Wagon, okay?
And you're still
because
paying.
But things are looking up, I promise.
Right. Yeah. And while you're
but
still
my credit
paying,
is awful right
while
now.
While you're still
yeah.
paying the other two loans still, yeah.
Turns out that I didn't like the Lambo. And I also didn't like. It turns out I'm not a truck guy, so now I want to try the G-Wagon. But my credit's horrible. Can you spot me a few million dollars?
Pettiness abounds in New York. So we go from the Giants to the Jets. If you missed it, Seth, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about Derek Stingley Jr. and his tackling, and it's been really, really good. And it was great last night against CeeDee Lamb. Sauce Gardner, not so much. Sauce Gardner is catching all sorts of heat for his inability to tackle. He's not alone. The tackling's been so bad with the Jets that their interim head coach, Jeff Ulbrich, showed like a video or a demonstration on tackling, which Sauce Gardner took great umbrage with. As it turns out, Sauce Gardner missed a crucial tackle in the game against the Colts on Sunday, a game that the Jets lost. Eventually, he did make a tackle in the game, which led to the petty Jet fans giving him a standing ovation for making a tackle, which he acknowledged in an interview after the game.
It was crazy. It was crazy today. Obviously, the fans was all in it. You know, they had their moments, where they got I even got a standing ovation off a tackle. I was just like, seriously? But they just so passionate about the Jets and about what we do. And we know that, but we just got to find ways. Got to find ways to win. We got to start faster. And
yeah.
Okay, this is
passionate.
You know how it's been noted that Gen Z doesn't quite seem to get sarcasm the same way we do?
Yep.
We grew up on nothing but sarcasm and irony. Boy, that is peak He didn't even understand they were making fun of him, did they?
I don't know.
Good for him taking it at face value. He assumed positive intent.
Yes, he did. Yeah. That is some.
Unless I'm not picking up on his sarcasm. Yeah, I don't know. I can't see his facial expression.
Either way, I mean, the petty people in this whole thing are the Jet fans themselves, who are like giving standing ovations to guys for making a tackle.
Oh, they get every excuse in the world, though, to be. They can live in petty cast 24/7.
For sure.
They've been wronged greatly.
Yep.
The Texans' angle to that is, look, you want to get into arguments about Derek Stingley versus Sauce Gardner, and Derek Stingley is doing just many, many things better than Sauce Gardner this year, but his willingness to tackle and his embracing of the physical part of the game and everything else is just so far light years ahead of Sauce Gardner. When it comes to being like the kind of football player you want on your defense, Derek Stingley is just that guy, and Sauce Gardner is... He's got all these diva tendencies, but without the genuine skill. Like, he wants to act like he's Deion, but he's not Deion caliber.
Deion
could get away with kind of making business decisions and everything, but like Sauce Gardner, no, you're not playing like Deion.
Nope.
You don't get to make those business
you
decisions.
You do not. Speaking of Deion, we played this yesterday, but let's play it again. This is some really petty stuff here from Deion. Deion asked about, was asked by the media following Colorado's win over, God, who did they play this past week? Utah. He was asked afterwards about, hey, make the case for Travis Hunter for the Heisman Trophy. And, of course, Deion turned it into an answer about his ongoing battle with the media, the national media.
Off your report, Travis had a tremendous day. He had an interception, a touchdown, and then one of the crazier catches you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm.
What would your message be to Heisman voters who are undecided?
Sit up here and get no message, no Heisman voters is undecided. If they can't see, they can't see. It is what it is. I mean, Travis is who he is. It's supposed to go to the best college football player. I think that's been a wrap since, what, week two? So we ain't petitioning for nobody. We ain't doing that. We got a wonderful display of cameras here, and I think we're on national television every week. If they can't see it, there's a problem. Don't allow their hatred for me to interfere with our kids' success. They got to stop that. Y'all got to stop some of y'all like that. Y'all got to stop that, man.
Dude,
give the kids what they deserve, man.
Nobody.
I had my turn.
Okay, we got you, Deion. What? It's all good. Nobody's been hating on you for a while now.
But even if they are, they're not hating on Travis. Like, that's right. Not. This is the ultimate making it about me moment.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, this is the father whose son just won the state championship, and somehow he figures out a way to make it about himself.
This is quintessential pettiness right here.
Hey, how's it feel that your son just won the state championship?
Yep.
Oh, it's a great moment for me because, you know, really, honestly, I never got the respect I deserve. So I feel like this is a championship for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Yeah. Let's just leave yourself out of it for a minute, Deion.
Okay, you and I just got to...
No, you're not that. Deion, you are one of the brightest stars that has shined in the past... In this century, in the previous one, in sports, you're still not the main character when it comes to Travis.
No. You and I just got a text from our friend Garrett, the former web guy here, who is, if you know the history of this station, Tom Herman, former U of H coach, who had big-time rabbit ears when he was here. He heard and read everything. And he used to come on weekly on the Triple Threat, on the afternoon show that I used to be on. He stopped his appearances on this station after Garrett the Web Guy, at the beginning of the 2016 season, his second season here, Tom Herman, Garrett wrote a piece about the top places Herman could wind up coaching after he leaves U of H. Herman took great offense. I'm ever going to leave U of H. Why is 610 doing this? I'm not going on that station anymore.
And Garrett had also pointed out that Texas was the most likely destination.
Correct, yeah.
Which people thought Garrett was such an idiot
for. He was a dummy, yeah.
Garrett basically could have filed restraining orders against people for some of the crap that they were coming. All fueled by Tom Herman and his cult members.
That was the ugliest
cabal.
Yeah, that was the ugliest side of the Coug fan base back then. But they all came around on Tom Herman because eventually... he would lie about leaving U of H late in the season, and he'd be the UT coach like a day after lying. The reason we're bringing this up is because, and we're going to relive some magic from Tom Herman here in a second, because as long as we're going to get petty, let's get super petty. Tom Herman fired yesterday in his second year as the coach at Florida Atlantic. He, of course, we talked about him on the Pettycast a couple weeks ago when he got into it with the South Florida head coach following the game. Herman fired, and there were a lot of Cougs and a lot of people, a lot of Longhorns, taking great pleasure in Tom Herman getting fired from a non-Power Four job yesterday. Just to relive the magic, though, of what we're talking about here, this was Tom Herman prior to playing Memphis in 2016, where the rumors were flying about him going to LSU, actually, at the time. He wound up going to Texas, but he was playing all the schools against themselves back then. Here is Cole Kubelik, the sideline reporter for that game, before the game, catching Herman going into the locker room.
Coach Herman, how have you prepared your team? Describe for me how you've prepared your team mentally for this game this week.
Well, no different. You know, I said, basically the intensity, the passion, the level of energy that we played with last week, we have to match that this week on the road against a really good football team that's playing their senior day with an opportunity to improve their bowl positioning.
How have you addressed with your team the reports that there are multiple schools interested in your services and you might not be the head coach at Houston next year?
Honesty. Don't believe anything that you read.
Can you confirm those reports are false?
Absolutely. Sure.
So how have you instructed your agent to handle your situation moving forward?
I'm not going to talk about any other job except the one I got right now and these kids.
Okay. I've, as a former player, I've been in a situation with a coaching change. I know it can be challenging. How will you handle that with your kids today?
There's nothing to handle except beating Memphis.
Your focuses lie strictly with beating Memphis today?
100%.
Thank you very much, Coach.
Thank you.
Bad liar. Really bad liar.
Now, this is the whole thing about Tom Herman. Yeah. Because even just hearing that, you know, you think like, okay, well, college coaches are stuck in this position all the time. They got to, you know, use coach speak or whatever it might be. And that was a pretty persistent line of questioning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, was that like four or five questions in a row?
Yeah.
So I could see Coug fans, I could see Cougs at the time kind of being like, all right, yeah, seriously. Well, how the hell is he supposed to answer it? The key is that, no, Ed Oliver still remains, as far as I know, disgusted with Tom Herman and how brazenly he lied to the players themselves. Like, it wasn't just coach speak to the media. It was boosters, it was the players, it was everything. Yeah.
And then he left the car at the airport. Remember that?
Booster's car at the airport.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, pick it up whenever.
Yeah. Dude, at least bring the car back, man. Come on.
Not to mention, you know, then you're having the booster have to pay for the parking charges, too.
Everything.
You know, the added insult of, like, okay, some booster's got to send his assistant up to Bush to get the car and also then give him money to,
yeah. By the way, going to Bush Intercontinental is the worst. Ugh.
Let me check my calendar. Yeah, it was under construction back
then.
Yeah,
I'm going to assume it sucked.
Was that within the last 20 years? Yeah, there was construction that was delaying things.
It was 2016, I'm going to assume it was terrible going up there. That was the Pettycast. We do it each and every week in the 8 o'clock segment. Up next, we actually have people requesting the latest Andre Ware call from the game that people want to hear. We'll do that in the next segment, almost a Pettycast leftover morsel. I have one big concern that's Joe Mixon related right now, and I'm curious if Seth shares this same concern. We will discuss both of those things coming up.
Baxton and I, Stover and Mixon, first and goal from the one. Hand off Joe, right side run. He's in! Touchdown! Hat trick! Joe Mixon scores! And the Texans celebrate the end zone. And the Battle Red faithful cheer them on here in Arlington.
Oh, they have not left, my friend. They are here. And the lower bowl, it is just filled with red.
33 points on the board for Houston.
You know, Joe has been amazing. He's been somebody who came in and taught guys how to win more, you know, because we won some games last year. But, you know, he taught guys what it takes to get to that bowl, you know. And, you know, we're not there yet, but, you know, we're taking strides. And every team goes through adversity throughout the year, you know. So my message to the team and his as well has been, we hit our adversity. Let's not look back and let's just march forward and, you know, put our best foot forward. And, you know, we know we can play with everybody, but now we got to play four quarters, and once we do that, you know, we'll be able to be a hard team to stop.
Mixon, we'll call it a trade and then a contract extension. It wasn't a free agency signing, but it kind of was. It was in that same part of the calendar. It was a really good pickup, obviously. It's paid huge dividends. Joe Mixon's going to be on this team for at least another year after this. Well, you know, you never know with running backs. He's under contract for two more years after this one. We'll see where it goes. But he's been awesome this year. He is clearly the only running back they trust right now. And I'm curious, Seth, if you have the same concern I do, that, yeah, Joe Mixon looks real spry right now, and it might have even helped him in terms of just his overall punishment that he's taken, that he actually did miss a few games with that high ankle sprain. Otherwise, he might have had another 25 touches in each of those games, and who knows? I am concerned about the lack of depth at running back right now. They clearly do not trust Dameon Pierce. I think they trust Dari Ogunbowale for what he is, which is a spot third down guy and a triage break glass in case of emergency guy. And then after that, they cut J.J. Taylor yesterday. Like, I'm concerned about Mixon's workload right now.
Never once this entire season at any point from the first kickoff until now have we had a discussion about, hey, is it more the offensive line or Mixon that's getting these rushing yards?
Correct.
Hey, anybody could run behind this O-line. Last night, there's so many plays where, okay, it's Mixon making something out of nothing. And that final touchdown, it wasn't horribly blocked, but it was you had three tight ends and extra offensive linemen. It was big, heavy personnel on the goal line. Hey, we're going to line up and we're going to rugby scrum it in there. And they barely got in because Mixon's able to make that drive and that push. Great. Good for that. Good for you. But it's all Mixon. So, yes, I think it's fair to be nervous about it. And yet, I just don't have the mental bandwidth right now to worry about how Mixon might fare physically or how this might affect his contract 2 or 3 years from now. You absolutely 100% need Joe Mixon to stay healthy for the rest of the year. But you don't have a choice. Like, you're going to have to use him. He's the guy that is working right now. The only guy that's working right now.
Yeah, no, you got no choice. No, you're absolutely right about that. I'm not super concerned about what 25 and 26 look like. I'm glad he's under contract for both of those years. Was my point in bringing that up. But I am concerned about when you get to, you know, the Chiefs, the Ravens. Like, they've got a schedule coming up, Seth, that not only is – they've got a schedule coming up after the bye week that if Joe Mixon is starting to show some signs of wear and tear, playing three games in 11 days is not going to be the elixir to help him feel a whole lot better heading into January. Three games that they're going to need him for if they're going to win those games.
Yeah, and I think, too, look, we saw the obvious benefit of having Nico in the game. And it's tough because a lot of it, look, the screen, I think if Laramie had just been able to stay, Laramie gets
2 yards back.
Illegal man downfield on that 1 yard back. If he had just stayed at the 1 yard, and honestly, the depth that Laramie Tunsil was at, a lot of times guys might get away with that because it was just an extra yard beyond the line of scrimmage. But it was the problem was he tried to sell the run. He did a good job doing that, but it felt like he's trying real hard to fake something that he's not all that good at to begin with.
Yeah.
So he botched it, and he came out too aggressively. That's specifically the reason the rule is in there, to keep the defense from being unfairly baited into playing the run. So it was a very valid penalty. And yet, if he hadn't done it exactly that way, if he had done it the legal way, I think it was still going to be a touchdown. So that's the that's 70 yards. And at that point, you've got the touch. You've got the second half called reception that was overturned. That if it's a better pass, Nico's there. He's open. So, like, you saw the effect that Nico can have there. But then, especially more so in the first half, some of the easy stuff over the middle, the quick game, you have that. You've got answers to some of the pass rush issues because Nico is there. You just hope that by the time they get that three-game stretch, that it's just more of a high-functioning unit where, Joe Mixon might get 12 carries in a game and you feel okay about it.
That New England game, man, where he had 13 carries for 102 yards, that's what I like. Now, that was the one game Dameon Pierce had a good game in this year, too. I don't think it's a coincidence.
And the other thing, too, is, man, I'm like everybody else. There's a part of me that says, hey, look, they started off up-tempo. That was working really well. Spread it out a little bit. You know, don't have all these condensed formations. But then when you spread it out a little bit, Juice Scruggs just gets destroyed.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and then they decide not to pick up an A-gap blitz.
Right.
Like, all these idiotic, stupid things.
Yeah.
High school-level BS.
Right.
It's a mess. Look, Drew Scruggs is going to get beat physically every now and then. These inane pass protection mental errors are so frustrating.
Yep.
And you just can't trust them.
All right, so the Laramie Tunsil play you were talking about, Seth, the illegal man downfield on the very first play, on the very first play of the game for the Texans that negated a 77-yard touchdown. It's interesting, on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans, back-to-back texts. That was a ticky-tack call on Tunsil on the first play. That's text number one. The follow-up from a different texter, very, very next text. Guys, do you have Andre Ware after the Nico Collins touchdown was called back?
You know, and I know, I think D'Amico was upset about that call, too. I wasn't at all. Laramie Tunsil himself, who never, he almost used to never even acknowledge that he should have gotten penalized. He looked as guilty, he looked like a golden retriever that got caught eating the brownies
on
the table.
I like that. He was kind of taking it to heart.
Yeah. Like, he knew immediately, crap, that's on me. And it didn't look like he was angry or anything. That was, I mean, it's textbook. If you put yourself, I was surprised that D'Amico thought it was ticky-tack. Because if he's a linebacker and he sees the tackle move that way, he's like, oh, yeah, that's why the rule exists.
He'd have been pissed.
That's unfair. Yep. No, he's dead. That was illegal. Yeah.
Here is the call that the texter is asking. I've not heard this yet, so I'm looking forward to listening to this. We know Andre went nuts on Titus Howard last week for the play where Titus strip-sacked his own quarterback and was standing around after he thought he had finished his block. Here is Andre Ware, Texans color commentator, after that very first play that was called back because of a Laramie Tunsil penalty.
Hits Nico left side, and he navigates his way across the 30, 45, 50. He's still going. The 40, the 30, the 20, 10, 5. Touchdown. There's a flag down.
It's coming back.
Oh, my.
For a hold. Oh, my goodness. What a way to start a game and then have it erased. My goodness. What a weapon Nico Collins is. And he has been missed.
The ineligible man downfield against the offense, number 78.
Oh, my God.
It's a 5-yard penalty replay, first down.
I mean, you know the play coming into the game. You know what it is. There is absolutely no reason to have that happen.
It wipes out a huge play for the Texans. That was 77 yards erased. And it didn't need to happen that way.
No, you know the play that's coming all week long. That's been the play in practice.
Aikman, dude. The two quarterbacks watching that play, that's immediately what they went to.
Dude.
That's the scripted play. You knew you were going to start with that play. How do you screw up the one thing we worked on?
These tackles are going to kill Andre Ware. They're going to kill our friend Andre Ware, these two tackles. Titus Howard and Laramie Tunsil.
It feels like the old, that Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry perfect cheer. We've got the perfect cheer. And you botch the perfect cheer.
You're all set
to go.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Ware does not suffer these penalties lightly.
No.
I feel like they're taking years off his life.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Hey, while we're kind of doing some petty cast leftovers here, here was J.J. Watt. On the Manning cast last night, if you missed it, the stadium, AT&T Stadium, game was supposed to be played with the roof open. Unfortunately, the Cowboys opened the roof of the stadium during the day, and some wind blew a large piece of sheet metal onto the, I can't believe I'm saying this.
Was it a hurricane, Sean?
The wind. No, it was just wind. It was just wind.
Oh, okay.
It was your garden variety November afternoon wind blew through.
Oh, okay. Because it's funny, because NRG Stadium, actually, they had some damage from a hurricane.
No, this was
a hurricane.
It's a stiff breeze.
They didn't almost murder anybody the way Jerry Jones almost committed negligent homicide.
Right.
Homicide yesterday.
So
that piece of,
sheet metal blowing down onto the field. Now, it happened before the game. It didn't hit anybody, fortunately.
It came within 3 feet of a Texan staffer.
But it didn't hit anybody. But you're right. It was a very scary situation. Here's J.J. Watt on the Manning cast taking a shot at the Cowboys in their janky-ass stadium.
From that, it's not a bad thing.
That crowd shot in Dallas kind of says it all right there. They either left to avoid the falling ceiling panels or the game's not going too well. And I think it is.
Five games in a row at home that they've been down at some point by more than 20 points. That's not good. I think going six, if you go back to the playoffs last year.
All right. Thank you, Eli. We appreciate that.
Thank you for the stat nugget, Eli.
That was good.
I haven't watched the Manning cast much at all. But does Eli now have like nice little stat nuggets that he can throw out? Is that a thing he does now?
I don't watch. I watch the main broadcast. I don't watch the Manning cast either. It's no disrespect to the Mannings. I just like.
Right. No, it's a, you gotta. It's just a. Yeah. It's not my deal. I don't. I would listen to the Manning cast as a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like some of the conversations they have, but when it comes to like really being dialed in on the game, it's hard sometimes.
Yep.
The fact that that stadium was falling apart in a game where there were more Texans fans than Cowboys fans possibly, and the Cowboys have yet to win a game at home. You've got a lame duck head coach on the sideline. You've got a redheaded quarterback again. Like, I just, Jerry Jones and his fetish for redheaded quarterbacks, I don't get it. It's just his thing. He's into paternity suits and redheaded
QBs.
That's his kink, okay?
Yep, that's his deal. Not only, they're not just 0-5, they're 0-5 by an average of 24 points. Like, the Texans literally took care of the same business that everybody else has. They won. The Cowboys came into that game last night 0-4, losing by an average of 23.7 points per game. What did the Texans do? They came in and beat them by 24. That's what teams do when they go to Jerry World now, and the Texans took care of that business. All right, sign of success from that game last night came this morning on television. To me, the perception, the biggest sign of success for the Texans last night, we'll tell you what that is coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Tuesday. Kind of like this bump that we're bumping in with here.
Feel like like techno Viking like feel to it.
Yeah, like a European discotheque or something, man. Absolutely.
Sean, have you ever seen? I feel like that's. Do you know the techno Viking?
I do. Yeah, I remember.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I didn't know if that. I thought that might have been one of those gaps in where you're like, sometimes there's like a huge viral video I'll come across that apparently like 900 million people saw in 2009, but I was unaware of it.
Any gap that I have in something pop culture is usually tied to when my kids were at their most high maintenance. You know what I mean? Like, sporting events and, you know, just I had, you know, three of them all within, I had three kids all within 17 months of each other. Mm-hmm. Things were a little hectic for me from like 1998 through 2003. If there's a movie that was in that time frame there, there's a decent chance I haven't seen it. You know, that might be where my Gladiator blind spot came in. I think it came out right around that time frame, Seth, if you recall. You forced me to watch Gladiator.
Yeah, you had a huge blind spot with Gladiator.
Big time.
Techno Viking still gets me going. But then there was a time, I still dial it up every now and then when I need to really get going.
Yeah.
But then you start wondering, like, oh, wait a second, is this guy like an actual Nazi or something?
Right.
So I dug into it, and he's not at all.
Oh,
he kind of just disappeared.
That's good.
He's just a guy who liked to dance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Top of the hour, we'll do the power ranking of the power rankings. How much did last night's win affect the overall opinion of the Houston Texans when it comes to the national pundits? Speaking of national, Seth, as you know, one of my big measurements of success for the Texans in this game last night, as we were breaking it down throughout last week and over the weekend, was going to be what are the talking heads saying about this game on Tuesday after the Texans hopefully destroy the Dallas Cowboys. They did. They won 34-10. It was probably looked a little harder if you watched it from beginning to end than the final score would indicate. The Texans got a defensive touchdown and then a short field touchdown in the fourth quarter to extend their lead to 34-10 in this game. But to me, the measurement of success was the fact that these are the two biggest questions that are being asked on the ESPN shows this morning. These are the lead questions being asked on Get Up and First Take. The big one, should Deion Sanders be the next Cowboys head coach? Which is a corollary to my ultimate wish, which was, should Mike McCarthy be fired this week? I think it's just another way of questioning Mike McCarthy's job tenure there.
Right, and Mike McCarthy, as a refresher, this was a topic in the offseason, but Mike McCarthy's on a lame duck contract. He doesn't even have to get fired at the end of the year. Jerry
agent
can do what he loves to do, which is just kind of wait as long as possible. You know?
Just let it end.
Hold! And he'll probably just let it expire.
Yeah.
And teams aren't hiring coaches as quickly anymore. They're trying to really take their time. So I still think the favorite is probably going to be Vrabel.
Vrabel is
the favorite right now, and yeah. I think it makes more sense because I don't know if Jerry can't handle a threat to his ego of having Deion Sanders there. I don't think.
That's an interesting one.
He's not a do guy. Like, he's not going to be his little errand boy. You know, yeah. Like, Deion wouldn't be manageable and controllable. And, I don't think Jerry has that in him. That's been his problem ever since Jimmy Johnson, really. You know, he can't handle any kind of a threat to his supreme and ultimate control. And he has zero concern over, like, helping a coach avoid distractions or anything like that.
Vrabel's an interesting one because if the Cowboys do fire Mike McCarthy, and I think they will at the end of the year, they're going to have a battle for Vrabel's services. Like I mentioned earlier, man, just listening to folks up in Cleveland, Ohio State guy, Ohio guy, Mike Vrabel, they want him bad up in Cleveland.
Really?
They want Vrabel bad up there. And I don't think these two teams would be alone. I think Vrabel, the second he got fired by Tennessee, I go, okay, he's a good coach who's just in a bad situation there with Will Levis as his quarterback. Vrabel's going to take a year off. I know he's coaching somewhere right now. You know, I don't know if he's a consultant or an assistant coach or whatever. People keep talking about Belichick. I think Vrabel's going to be the most sought-after guy. Him and Ben Johnson of the Lions, yeah, I think, are going to be the two most sought-after guys.
Yeah, and I just don't, I mean, I'd be really intrigued because obviously Parcells and Belichick have a relationship. And, you know, I think Parcells was the last guy. Yeah, you know what I said since Jimmy Johnson. Really, it's probably Parcells that really broke Jerry, which is like, oh, okay. I don't like having somebody that's really going to try to tell me what to do.
No.
And he hired good guys after that.
Yep.
Some capable coaches and everything.
Sure.
But just guys that weren't threats to his ego.
Wade Phillips, and Jason Garrett. Yeah.
And I think Belichick's a big threat to his ego. The only other thing I would think about that is Jerry might look at it as, boy, I could really do one on Bob Kraft right now. Bob Kraft always taking these little jabs at me and everything. I could really put one on Bob Kraft if I win a Super Bowl with his coach.
Yeah, that'd be fun. The other big question that's getting asked on the and I wasn't even expecting this one, but I view it as a sign that last night was a big success for the Texans. Should the Cowboys trade Micah Parsons in the offseason? That would be the
last offseason. Yes, they totally should have.
I know this.
Hindsight 2020. Yeah, you should have traded him already.
I'm looking at it right now. Like literally, I'm reading off the screen. Lewis Riddick. It's not ridiculous for the Cowboys to consider trading Micah Parsons. Obviously, the trade deadline's come and gone, so it would be this coming offseason.
Yeah, this would be after the Cowboys miss the playoffs.
Correct.
And they have to sit and watch the playoffs. And then after the Super Bowl's over, they could start having discussions about trading him. But you still can't trade him until the beginning of May there.
Right.
So I think it's – I would say it's probably more likely right now that he gets traded than not. There's been zero drama about Micah Parsons not getting an extension where – in a lot of other situations, people would be looking at it. Of course, you extend Micah Parsons, but the Cowboys have two other league leading contracts in CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott. It's really hard to have three of those types of guys. And Micah hasn't shown any signs of agitating for it or anything either. I think that ship has sailed. More likely than not, I think he gets traded.
Is Micah Parsons a two first round pick trade guy for a team?
Oh, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the trade market's so all over the place, but yeah, I would guess there's going to be somebody out there that's going to get real hot and bothered about the thought of bringing in Micah Parsons.
I'm with you on that. I will say this just in general is that the trade market itself, like the league as a whole seems to have lost its appetite for trading multiple first rounders for guys.
Right, yeah. Right.
Doesn't mean there won't be one or two dumb teams out there.
And I'm saying it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities at all. Yeah. And I just, you know how the trade market goes. One year, there aren't that many trades. So you start to feel like, oh, wow, there's no trade market. It's all very individual and specific.
Very fluid.
To the situation.
Yeah.
Micah's so rare. And I think people would point to his just kind of seemingly being goofy mentally or some of the statements that he makes and all of that. Listen, when it comes to pass rushers, don't worry about it. They're weird. A lot of the very best ones, they're different dudes, man.
Yeah.
And it's just that with Micah, Dallas is the worst possible environment for kind of tamping down some of the weirdness.
Yeah.
You put Micah Parsons in Green Bay or somewhere like that. I don't think it's nearly as much of a topic.
What are the odds that Micah Parsons says something on his podcast this week that gets traction about the Cowboys, about the game? You know, he just got done losing to his buddy C.J. Stroud, so now this is yet another podcast host slash defensive player in the NFL that C.J. can hang success over their heads. He's got E.J. Speed and Zaire Franklin in Indy hang the sweep over their head of the Colts, and now he's got hand on Micah Parsons too, Seth. What are the odds Micah says something silly this week that you and I are playing on this show Wednesday or Thursday?
I think it's low. I don't think Micah himself liked kind of being made a conversation point after he, I think, inadvertently took shade at threw shade at Mike McCarthy last week.
Yeah.
It was weird because he inadvertently threw shade, but I feel like it was his true sentiments. That he didn't mean it to come out the way it did, but it was more of a Freudian slip. I don't think he liked that he was a talking point on the national shows and everything. I think you're going to see him just try to be a good soldier the rest of the year,
mm-hmm.
and come what may.
It's going to make for a pretty boring podcast, I will say that. I will not be listening if he's not saying stupid things.
I got a little distracted thinking about great eccentric defensive linemen of the past, including Charles Haley. From Dallas.
He was eccentric.
When I say they're weird, I genuinely don't mean that like in a derogatory way. There's so many great pass rushers and defensive linemen that they're just wired differently. It's almost like they're almost like artists. They see the world differently than we do. They just have a different filter through which they observe the world. A lot of great pass rushers are that way. And they're just a little different. Like JJ is that way. He's just highly functioning.
Yeah.
But you can tell he just sees the world a little bit differently. I think Mike is that way.
What is Will Anderson?
He's the same way. Like he's got, so it's never, okay, that's
it's good.
Okay.
It's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
No, Will 100%. Like you can tell he's wired a little bit differently than your average 22-year-old.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean bad or or great or whatever, but like Will's got a certain, he's funny because he's almost got like a love to him. Like it's all like, over, like his cup overfloweth with love for
no
mankind.
Question. Yes.
And yet he plays a very violent position.
He does.
Yes. Yeah. It's just he's wired different.
Yep.
It's an unbridled enthusiasm.
We will get to it. It's a Texans Ticket Tuesday. We're going to give away Texans tickets in the 9 o'clock hour for this Sunday's game against the Tennessee Titans. So be listening for that. Up next, Power Rank the Power Rankings, man. Did last night's blowout win over the Cowboys affect the Texans' stock in any significant way with the national pundits? We will look in on that. Power Rank the Power Rankings is next.